Welcome back to the deep dive. Okay, so if you've ever, say, modeled stock market fluctuations, or maybe tracked the noise in a radio signal, or even just thought about how often you get true silence in a dynamic system, you know, randomness, well, it has a floor. Today, we are digging into something that sounds almost impossible, calculating the absolute minimum magnitude a continuous random signal can maintain over time. We're focusing deep on Gaussian processes. These are the mathematical workhorses, really, that describe continuous chaos. And we want to analyze the lower limits of their motion.
That's right. Our mission today is to explore this deceptively simple-sounding field called small ball probabilities, or SBP for short. It essentially provides a fundamental toolkit for understanding that absolute floor of stochastic processes, you know, the minimum possible magnitude a trajectory can take. The central question in SBP sounds straightforward, but, well, the answer is anything but. If you're observing some chaotic process, we want to know the rate. How quickly does the probability of that process staying almost perfectly flat, almost exactly zero? How quickly does that probability vanish?
Right. As our definition of almost perfectly flat gets smaller and smaller.
Exactly. We're quantifying how quickly that probability disappears as the allowed deviation, that little ball around zero, shrinks to nothing.
And this defines the small deviation problem, which you mentioned is very different from the more famous large deviation theory.
Yeah, completely different focus. If large deviation helps us understand the ceiling, think Strassib's law of the iterated logarithm, the maximum excursion's SBP is entirely focused on the floor. How close can it get to zero?
What's really striking looking at the material is just how complex SBP turns out to be. I mean, our sources point out there are only really a handful of processes where this probability can be completely pinned down analytically.
Oh, absolutely. It's notoriously difficult math.
So much so that mathematicians have had to invent some, well, really ingenious shortcuts just to make any headway.
Precisely. Because solving SBP directly is often intractable for most processes we care about, we have to rely heavily on foundational inequalities to set the necessary bounds to kind of box the problem in. The first set of tools people developed were comparison inequalities. You see work from mathematicians like Borel, Sudikov, Cyrilson here. The basic idea is, since calculating the probability measure of a complex set of paths is nearly impossible,
right,
these powerful geometric tools let you compare the measure of that complicated set against a much simpler shape, something you do know the measure of, like comparing it to a ball or an ellipsoid.
Okay, wait. If this calculation is so hard, are we always just getting estimates with these tools? Or can these bounding methods actually give us the exact answer sometimes? What's the risk we're only finding the floor's, you know, general neighborhood, not the precise spot?
That's a really critical point. For finding tight lower bounds nailing down that hard floor, we often turn to a different class, correlation inequalities. One of the most powerful here is the Katri-Sedak inequality. It's incredibly useful.
How does that one work?
Well, it allows us to decompose these really complicated probabilities, specifically probabilities of maximums of Gaussian variables staying small into simpler, more manageable pieces related to the individual components. It gives a solid lower bound. And this whole reliance on bounding tools, it touches on something legendary in the field, the Gaussian correlation conjecture.
Ah, yes, I saw that mentioned. Still unsolved, right?
Still technically an open problem, yes. It asks whether the probability measure of the intersection of two symmetric convex sets of paths is always greater than or equal to the product of their individual measures. But even though it's open, recent work, like Lee's theorem, provides really useful weak forms of this conjecture that have been absolutely invaluable for SBP applications. We can use these weaker forms even without the full conjecture being proven.
So it's fascinating. Measuring the floor of randomness suddenly connects directly with pure geometry.
Right.
How we measure the complexity of shapes. It's almost like finding the minimum noise in a signal is somehow the same math as figuring out how efficiently you can, I don't know, stack marbles in a weirdly shaped box.
That geometric link isn't just an analogy. It's formalized beautifully by something called the metric entropy link. It's a key theorem. The core insight is exactly what you said. The difficulty in calculating the small ball probability, that function phi of epsilon we mentioned, is mathematically identical, precisely linked to measuring how efficiently you can cover a specific geometric shape.
Which shape?
It's the unit ball of the underlying function space associated with the process, what's called the reproducing kernel Hilbert space, or RKHS. You measure how many tiny spheres of radius epsilon you need to cover that unit ball. That number is the metric entropy.
Wow.
So finding the probability that a random path stays close to zero is equivalent to solving a minimum covering problem in approximation theory. You completely shift domains from probability calculus to geometric measure theory.
That is a huge perspective shift, moving from probability to geometry. And there's another major conceptual shortcut too, isn't there?
Right.
One that takes us out of the path space entirely and into the time domain.
Absolutely. That's the exponential Tauberian theorem. This is another really powerful bridge. It connects the small ball behavior. What happens is epsilon goes to zero directly to the asymptotic evaluation of a totally different function, specifically the Laplace transform of a related positive random variable, but evaluated for large time as lambda goes to infinity.
So small deviations in probability space are linked to large time behavior in analysis.
Exactly. It means finding the small deviation rate is equivalent to solving a problem in classical analysis involving Laplace transforms at infinity. For instance, there's a known formula for the Laplace transform of the Mall integrated Brownian motion. Using this theorem, you can take the large time limit of that known transform, and it instantly gives you the SBP rate for that process.
Without ever calculating the original probability.
Without ever touching the original complex probability calculation involving the path space measure, it's an immense advantage, a huge computational shortcut.
Okay, so these incredible kind of indirect tools, comparison geometry, metric entropy coverings, large time analysis, these are what finally let mathematicians actually pin down the precise rates for some really important processes, processes we use all the time in modeling. Let's talk about those concrete numbers. Maybe start with fractional Brownian motion, FBM. That comes up a lot.
FBM is very important. It models processes with self-similarity and long-range dependence, which you see in finance, hydrology, lots of areas. For standard FBM, with parameter alpha between 0 and 2, the theory gives us sharp asymptotic bounds, especially under the SUP norm, that's the maximum distance norm. The log probability of the maximum absolute value staying below epsilon behaves like negative, some constant k times epsilon raised to the power of minus 2 over alpha. So sim e malo e epm varus of k epsilon 2 alpha.
And that exponent, 2 taller alpha, depends directly on the roughness parameter alpha.
Decisely. But here's where it gets interesting. If you transform the process, say by integrating it.
Which smooths it out.
Exactly. It smooths the path. The rate shifts dramatically. For the integrated fractional Brownian motion, the exponent changes. It becomes $2, 2 plus alpha. So making the path smoother significantly changes how quickly the probability of staying near zero vanishes. The smoother the path, the slower the decay.
That connection between the smoothness of the path or the function space it lives in and the rate of decay makes intuitive sense.
Okay, now let's hit the most famous case. Classical Brownian motion, BM. What are the small ball constants for just good old dollar T dollars?
Ah, for BM, we find some really elegant and precise results, especially under the L-pillar norms.
Yeah.
If we measure closeness using the maximum distance the path reaches the SUP norm, or PM50 case, the log rate is governed by a very specific constant, pi 28 total. It behaves like pi 28 tutter.
Pi squared over 8. Now that number rings a bell. Isn't that from like classical physics, vibrating strings or something? It is. That constant, pi d 2 8 overs, is actually the principal eigenvalue of the Laplacian operator specifically, $1 d2 d02 dollars on the interval, $1 of Werner with Dirichlet boundary conditions. It's another one of those amazing connections. Finding the floor of random motion is inherently tied to solving boundary value problems in differential equations.
Incredible. And what if you use a different way to measure closeness, like the Tuller-Tudeau norm?
If you switch the metric, measuring closeness by the integrated squared distance, the 2CO2 norm, P222 constant changes significantly. It becomes pi 222 $2. And again, these precise constants, pi 28, 28, $2 in pi 2, they're derived from the smallest eigenvalue of a specific differential operator, which involves the second derivative and a term 6 Pauler's edge. It just reinforces that deep link between these probability questions and classical analysis.
So whether you measure closeness by the peak deviation or the total accumulated squared distance, you land on a constant rooted in fundamental physics and differential equations. That's really something.
It is quite beautiful. And we also know, more generally, that the constant, let's call it Telford, exists for fractional Brownian motion under the SUP norm, even if we don't always have a simple closed form for it, like 2 under 8 dollars. But importantly, once the existence of that constant CalPhys is established, it becomes a benchmark.
Yeah.
We can then determine other related SBT results, like for weighted norms where you introduce a varying weight function across the path.
Oh, yeah.
Simply by integrating that weight function relative to this fundamental constant CalPhys. So it acts as a reference point.
Okay, this is fantastic. We've covered the technical definitions, the challenge, the ingenious mathematical tools like comparison inequalities and metric entropy, and these really concrete, beautiful constants that emerge. Now, let's hit the crucial question. So what? Why do we care? How does calculating the rate of these vanishingly small probabilities actually change how we understand stochastic processes in practice?
Right, the so what? It's fundamental because knowing the SBP essentially dictates the absolute guardrails on randomness. It's vital for understanding limit theorems, the laws that govern long-term behavior and convergence. Take, for example, Strassen's functional law of the iterated logarithm, LIL. This law describes the set of all possible limit points of scaled Brownian paths. The SBP function, that phi epsilon, actually determines the precise rate of convergence in Strassen's law. For classical Brownian motion, this leads to that famous rate involving log log 3 old. That rate comes directly out of the SBP analysis.
I see. So it sharpens our understanding of these major limit laws.
Exactly. And maybe even more directly, SBP results determine the lower limits of the process. This is the territory of Chung's law of the iterated logarithm. If you want to know, mathematically, what is the smallest possible fluctuation or increment a fractional Brownian motion is likely to exhibit over a shrinking time interval, the absolute minimum bound on its volatility. In a sense, you need the SBP rate. It tells you how small the small can be.
So it's definitely not just theoretical curiosity. It's about setting the hard boundaries on the possible magnitude of noise or fluctuations or whatever random element you have in a system governed by these kinds of processes.
Precisely. And there's another major application area, fractal geometry. When you generate a random set or a random surface using a Gaussian field, think of modeling rough terrain or complex textures, the SBP tells you essential things about its geometric structure.
Like how rough it is.
Exactly. How rough, how dense, how fragmented. The decay rate of the small ball probability, that exponent we keep seeing, is crucial for determining things like the Hausdorff measure and the fractal dimension of the random set generated by the process. It fundamentally defines the very texture of randomness in a geometric sense.
Wow. That's quite a journey then. We started with abstract measure theory, difficult inequalities like a Catrice-Sedak, delved into geometric covering problems with metric entropy, and ended up with concrete numbers, constants like Pei-2-8-Dahl and 2-2-2 that define the physical boundaries of chance and inform everything from rates and limit laws to the fractal dimension of random shapes.
Yeah, I think that captures it well. SBP is really the fundamental analysis of these flat trajectories, the trajectories that stay unexpectedly close to zero. And it beautifully links the mathematical difficulty of approximation theory through that metric entropy connection with these essential constants that govern the behavior of core processes like Brownian motion. It really tells us about the absolute floor of stochastic movement.
It really does. So as you, our listeners, continue to think about this or maybe explore it further, here are a couple of persistent mathematical challenges, areas where, despite all these breakthroughs, things are still wide open. The first is this stubborn difficulty in higher dimensions. For the Brownian sheet, which is like a 2D version of Brownian motion, in dimension dollars greater than or equal to 3, while mathematicians still cannot pin down a single sharp rate for the small ball probability under the subnorm, there's still a gap between the best-known upper and lower logarithmic bounds. It's really quite surprising that just going to higher dimensions makes finding that sharp rate so much harder.
It is a major sticking point.
And the second challenge, it's about the constants themselves. We know, mathematically, that constants exist for many important cases like the SBP for Brownian motion under different norms, like the H-Older norm, or for L-Pala norms where Pels is in $2 for infinity. But actually finding an explicit, purely analytical formula for those constants,
yes,
like we have Pi-2A2 and Terranus and Pi-2-2-2-ins, that remains a significant open challenge for many of them. We know the number is there, we can prove its existence, maybe compute it numerically, but we can't yet write down its exact symbolic form.
Still plenty of mysteries left in figuring out just how close to zero randomness can get.
Indeed. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the mathematics that defines the very floor of randomness.